I don't at all feel really. It's almost like a joke to say the rehaspit for Marenu, Hagoyin of Nosson Svifinkel, Zechat Sadak of Bracha. But as my Chavirim could attest, I'm sure many of them feel the same way. How could you not have a person who was lucky enough to live somewhere in the big shadow of Rav Nosson Tzvi at some point in his life? How could you not share with other people your own personal feelings? And as Rav Shira's brother so beautifully illustrated, there was such a tremendous amount of Ava that bound us to him, both that he felt for us and that we reflected back. I just want to make a request, which maybe is not so common in yeshiva, but Rav Nosson Tzvi was very, very, very edel, very gentle soul, and he would very, very rarely express himself strongly. One of the only times that I could remember, and you could see it hanging on the walls in yeshiva, is a very, very strongly worded sign prohibiting any cell phone use in the Beis Medrash, even in the hallways. So maybe out of cover for Rav Nosson Tzvi, if you happen to have something that's distracting you for the next little while, so his style was disconnect. So let's all maybe try, at least for the next, you know, till lunch, not so long from now, to try to disconnect so that we can connect to the words that we'll be hearing about Rav Nosson Tzvi, who was a very big trailblazer in trying to actually do what you're doing instead of not being there. There will be a couple of different Torah that I'm saying, but that's just to illustrate a point that I'm not going to be, I'm going to try to follow the Rabbi Aaron David's lead, but I'm not really saying. And the different Torah is just trying to give over stories and feelings about the Nosson Tzvi. It says that Avraham Avinu came to give a hesped for Sarah. Works out in this week's parasha. If you look in the Chumash, it's a little cuff. This is called the Sarah of Kosa, a little cuff. So the Baal Torah explains this because Sarah didn't live a long, full life, and therefore the crying wasn't so much over her lifetime because her lifetime was full. If we had a right of Kaisa, if we had a right, a cuff, for being master of nothing to be. It would have to take up the whole book. What a tremendous shock. I can't forget the moment when I was about to walk into yeshiva. I was right outside the doors. And Rabbi Yudin, I guess maybe you could tell I wasn't all red-faced. I wasn't crying. Didn't look like anything was bothering me, so he hopped right away that I must not know that Rav Nosson Tzvi was suddenly taken from us. Rav Nosson Tzvi was such a tremendous cuff. The Medrash says that the spur of the Sarah of the Kaisa, the cuff is like a palm of a hand. In a vrit, a calf, there's a lot of things, one of them is a palm. Rav Nosson Tzvi was the biggest cuff in the world, maybe the biggest fundraiser in the Jewish world today. I don't really know all the numbers, I'm not a financial expert. But Rav Nosson Tzvi just went around asking people for money, and sometimes he was chutz with it. But he felt like he had a mission. And that mission was to give us breakfast. That mission was to give us a check at the end of the month that could help pay for the gas, for the water. And he loved us so much that he went around doing something that he didn't really enjoy. Because, as Rabbi Aaron David said, he was the father. He had to help us. And so many of the Rabbeim in Yeshiva ate at Ernest Nisbi's table every day and looked forward to a little something at the end of the month. The story that's become famous, though, Ernest Nisbi asked one of his friends for an impossible amount of money. He said, "I can't." Ernest Nisbi looked at him and said, "I also can't. But I do it anyway." And just Ernest Nisbi, just looking at him, some of you, I'm sure, were privileged to see him. And I remember most years, especially as the year went on, I would always push all the boys, "You have to go. You have to go see. You have to go to his house on Erev Shabbos and listen to an English shmooze." You know, straight from the yeshiva world, but without all the difficulty understanding. I remember I once walked into Ernest Nisbi's house with a group of not yet religious college students, backpackers, and we all gathered in. And what do you say? Like, Ernest Nisbi, of course, we all know he came with the baseball hat on, without much. And we look at this yearbook picture, you can't see a Yanker there. Probably somewhere in the back, maybe in the back of his head somewhere, I don't even know. I don't know if I can't be a Yankers in those days. But you don't see it. You don't see it. And everyone's seen the picture, right? Raise your hand if you haven't seen the picture of Ernest Nisbi in high school. Okay, Rabbi David will show you what you want. So that picture, that's us. It's actually a family friend of mine who became aware was his madrif, Ernest Nisbi's madrif in Bnei Akiva. And he said exactly where Ernest Nisbi was holding and learning. I thought, you know, really, he's a genius. Although in his yearbook, he didn't say that he's valedictorian. He was just the student council president. So I guess he wasn't that much of a genius. But he said he read Rashi, I guess sort of like Rabbi David was saying, this boy couldn't read Rashi that. He didn't read any better than us coming out of high school. Back to my point. Ernest Nisbi was such an inspiration just in terms of how he was. You just looked at it. And you couldn't not be inspired by the effort that he put into everything that he did. But also his accomplishments totally didn't reflect the condition that he was in. There's even a story of a wealthy individual who was approached by Ernest Nisbi. He said, "Could you please give me $2 million? He said, it was after the recession had begun. He said, I can't do it. So Ernest Nisbi pleaded, he said, "At least lend me the $2 million. I have to pay the guys in the yeshiva. I can't. I have a pull." So he scraped and scraped and scraped and gave Ernest Nisbi $3 million. A little while later, his business completely fell apart. He went bankrupt, and he lost everything that he had. There's only one thing that he had, and that was that a few months later, Ernest Nisbi handed him $2 million. So he owes his whole, not only did he get this chus of lending the Mir Yeshiva that money, but he owes everything that he has today to the fact that he let himself be convinced to unwisely give those $2 million that he didn't really have, but that's all he ended up with. And in a way, I feel like we have so many different aspects of our lives, all that Rabbeinu learned in the Mir Yeshiva, and we've invested time and energy doing many things. But in a certain sense, our biggest legacy that we have is the time that we spent in the Mir Yeshiva. I remember I once took my son on his third birthday to do an upshare and haircuts. My family is in deeply concealed Hasidic roots. And I took to different Gilead Israel, to really Yashiv Shlita. And I went to Ernest Nisbi. And it was right at the Shacharis in the yeshiva, so I walked up to the yeshiva and I asked him, I said, "You know, my son just went to me today. Of course, it's only for me, it's just an excuse to get a bracha, like the snip. You know, I have a little baggie in my house that says, this is the snip that Ernest Nisbi took, and this is the snip that Rabbi Yashiv took, etc., etc. But Ernest Nisbi turned me down. He said, "You're going to have to wait till I get out of the base medrash." Because even though he loved us so much, he wouldn't cut my son's hair in the base medrash. He felt it wasn't appropriate. So I still remember that feeling, like on one hand feeling good, but on the other hand feeling like extra special, like Ernest Nisbi, as much as he loves everyone, he'll do everything, but he has certain code of behavior and he's never going to let up on that. The other kaf on Menasa Tzvi was the kaf of giving. The biggest thing maybe Menasa Tzvi gave us is exposure to somebody who has such a tremendous caliber of midas, such a tremendous avas atara. It was so contagious. Menasa Tzvi didn't have to say anything. You go to his house, and these are like the highlights. You go to his house in Erev Shabbos, and you give his shoes in English. And he'd say the most simple things, the most aleph-based things, the basics of Torah, of Judaism, and it would just go right in. When Menasa Tzvi said something, he embodied everything that he said. He said it without a trace of looking down at you. And everyone came to him. I still remember my brother's apartment in the Nir Yeshiva. I lived in the Nir Yeshiva both as a bachur and then later on in more years in Kolo. And there was an apartment that my brother was staying in. My brother Yehuda is Rebbe in YU. And there was a boy who used to hang out there. I don't even know if he was part of the yeshiva. He was like, you know, he hung around there all the time. He was wearing one of these ragged satin yarmulkes, like, sort of like a Syrian, but like, you know, hadn't had time to replace it. So it was like, you know, wearing at the ends. And I didn't know exactly what he was or who he was. But he's an American guy. And suddenly I see him walking out of the apartment, and so his friend said, look, you know, where are you going? He's like, I'm going to Rosh Hashiva. So I think, like, you know, is he going to ask me to, you know, cash me at the Eger? Like, what's he going to do? Is that? I didn't even think he was officially part of the yeshiva. So he said, oh, I'm trying to quit smoking. I just can't. I can't. I don't know. That's not how to do it. And I was like so taken aback that he felt totally comfortable, like going over to Menasa Tzvi and just asking him, you know, how to quit smoking, you know. I don't even think Menasa Tzvi ever met him. He didn't even know his name. You know, can't remember someone's name if you've never heard it. But he was fine doing that. I can't tell if he quit. The friend of mine who was learning in a certain different kollel, and yeah, from Rusa with Hashatam Chacham, who for some reason had a staff. So he ended up going to the mirror. Who wasn't in the mirror in those days? He went to the mirror, and I remember he had such a hard time. He came middle of the man, he couldn't really find the Tarusas, and officially in the mirror he had a little bit blocked. Every day another daf of Gemara. And Menasa Tzvi insisted he had it. He wanted to get paid by the kollel. You had to learn a daf every day, 20 blad a month, and you get tested on it afterwards, and you got an extra bonus if you did well on the test. He insisted. So for a while, he acted, and finally he said, you know what, I have to be part of this thing officially. He went to Menasa Tzvi and said, listen, I want to start learning the blad, but I want to start early. They were learning Subas that winter's month. So he said, I want to start in Elul already instead of learning Makas, or maybe it was not in the Ras and the Dar, I'm not sure of the Seder. So I want to start learning Subas now, and then I'll start the blat. So Menasa Tzvi said, no problem. But of course, he wouldn't give him a paycheck for that month because he wasn't learning the blat. And as the year went by, so this fellow, you know, who had been having a very hard time because he wasn't really in the swing. So every time that I would see how he's doing, it would always be like, oh, the blat, it's so great. I'm so happy. You come in every day, sit down, learn through the whole Seder, learn through the second Seder, then you had to make a night Seder to review, then you had to make a Seder on the Mitzvah Shabbos, and suddenly was learning and learning and learning, and I was very impressed. The next Seder, Rosh Hashiva made this thing with keeping Siddharah, and you had to come at a certain time, and end at a certain time, you couldn't take breaks, and if for a long time you kept the Seder of the Yeshiva, so then you get a bonus. And this fellow started to keep the Seder, and he showed himself that I still remember him jumping off, he said, jump off the van to zoom into yeshiva so he would get there before the deadline. It was 9:20, because all the vans used to come late. So the Seder starts at 9 o'clock, zoom in for 9:20, and I would sit on the same bench. At the end of the year, I remember the boys who were sitting on the bench along with us came to him and said, thank you so much for this man. He said, what? Thank you so much for this mind, because you showed me that a person can sit and learn with such intensity. We used to ask you questions, and we always know that you were there with Chavrusa the whole time. And I was like amazed that this guy who had, you know, come to me recently was able to be an example for others. And I realized that it was all because the Rav Nosson Tzvi cared about every single person and made me part of it. The way that I know this story so well is because that fellow was me. I have a phenomenal level of a curse of type for Rinnasan Svi. Not just because of his love and his example, but because he forced us. And that's another cup. The Medrash says, the Gemara says, that there's not a single blade of grass that grows without a malach that hits it and says, grow. And Rav Nosson Tzvi was the malach, and with his calf he would hit and he would say, grow. I want to read something to you that I just saw this morning. It's about Mendy. Mendy was in a bunch of different yeshivas, and none of them worked out. You guys know English, right? I can read a few paragraphs to you. The story that I just shared with you is about myself, and therefore for me it's very powerful, but this story, I think, is even more dramatic, and it shows us the level of love that Rav Nosson had, and what he was able to accomplish with it. He came to the mirror, because in those days it was very easy to get into the mirror. And he did, he got in. He wasn't sure if he was going to stick around, but when he went to Rav Nosson Tzvi the first time, Rav Nosson Tzvi grabbed his hand and gave him such a loving look that Mendy decided he'd stay. Just because of a few seconds that Rav Nosson Tzvi stared at him with this serene look of love in his eyes, right, without saying anything, he said, okay, I'm part of here in the mirror yeshiva. And even though Mendy didn't really have such great ambitions, such a major learning level, he was hooked in the yeshiva. In the middle of the winter's mind, we all know the middle of the winter's mind, sometimes it's a bit of a low. At the beginning, people are excited about something. At the end, you know, it's the end. But in the middle, so people start losing gas on the original ambitions. So the Rosh Hashiva was always looking for ways to up that. So he made this group called the 12-hour group. Whoever could be in this selective of Bachram and commit to learn for the next 6 weeks, 6 weeks in the middle of this month, maybe like from Thanksgiving and on, I don't know exactly how the cutoff point is. 6 weeks in the middle of this month, learn 12 hours. Now, if you keep all this down in the Mir Yeshiva, you almost have that. Because you have from 9:15 in the morning, which is 4 hours and 15 minutes, and then 3:37 in the afternoon. So that makes almost 8 hours, 7:45. And then, you know, the night seder is 8:30 till whenever. And then you fill in a little bit, but it takes a lot of determination. See, he said this in a public shmooze. He made it clear that he expected the good bracha to sign up for this new program, adding their names to a long list that had been hung up specifically for this purpose, which he himself would be reviewing. The Rosh Hashiva said that although the program was only for 6 weeks, he had no doubt that anyone who made the leap and signed up was guaranteed that the 6 week of heightened dedication would change his life. The energy and spirit was felt in every corner of the yeshiva. Bachram sitting and learning, no chatting, no coffee breaks, from 9 in the morning till midnight. That Friday, after the usual shmooze, the Bachram filed by Rav Nosson Tzvi to say good Shabbos. Mendy's turn came, and the Rosh Hashiva looked up at him. I didn't see her name on the list. Mendy was stunned. He wasn't in that league. He was far from that league. There were hundreds of names, and the yeshiva was exploding with hasmadas. What in the world did the Rosh Hashiva want from her? He laughed, hoping that the Rosh Hashiva would understand. I want you to sign up, said the Rosh Hashiva. It was clear that he wasn't joking. Mendy's mind was racing. 12 hours a day? That's inconceivable. But he didn't have a choice. The Rosh Hashiva was still grasping his hand, holding tight, waiting patiently. Okay, Rebbe, I'm in. He went to sign his name. Sunday morning he sat to learn, eager to get through one whole seder. It was hard, but not as hard as he thought. It was 1 o'clock, then 3, then 7:30, then midnight. And through it all he learned. Day 1, day 2. He went through half a week this way. And it was a new reality. A sense of being above this world. Of reaching beyond his own strengths and capabilities. But it was thrilling too. He had no room in his day or mind for anything besides learning, besides Torah. And even his eating and sleeping seemed somehow part of the schedule. On the fourth night, he fell into bed, exhausted, and slept deeply. His dreams carried with him hints and echoes of the encounters and thoughts of the preceding day. Chaydel, the famous city in the beginning of Basra, Rashi Sita, Reb Nachum's Diyan, the concept swirled in his brain, filling his sleeping hours with the pleasant words of Gemara and Lishonim. He woke in the morning suffused with an extraordinary joy and could barely contain himself through Shachris. As soon as davening was over, he hurried over to Rav Nachum's Rosh Hashiva. Rebbe, I dreamed in learning. Rav Nachum Tzvi smiled a long smile and rose to his feet. He reached for the hands of his Talmud, and together they started to dance. As Rosh Hashiva had guaranteed, Mendy's life was never the same. You can call me Mendy. You can call many, many thousands of Mir Yeshiva people Mendy and Rabbeinu Yeshiva, who also joined the ranks of Mendy's, that the Rosh Hashiva really got through to, some on a more personal level, some less so, but always with tremendous love and avid. The Rosh Hashiva once was giving a Friday shmooze, and it's after a wedding that he had made, and he turned to the boys and he said, you know, after the wedding, my mechutin, the father of the, I don't know if it was the son or daughter-in-law, said to me, I never saw anything like that in my life. He had seen the Rosh Hashiva and all the Talmidim came to the Shemazatav and give and receive their kiss. He said, it was like an ocean of love. And you can see the Rosh Hashiva was so proud. And he was so happy, and he turned to the Bachman and said, thank you so much. Like, that was what he had to thank the Bachman so much, because of course he attributed this ocean of love to the Bachman. Of course, who else was to be credited with the fact that the Bachman had so much love for him other than the Bachman themselves? The Derech Hashem, the Moshe Chaim Mitzata, talks about how when someone gets a lot of Yisurim, sometimes it's because Hashem picks him out and decides to make him a shliach for all of us to deal with a certain amount of suffering and give the whole Klal Yisrael a kapara. And he says, although it's obviously physically uncomfortable, the level that the person himself rises to is indescribable. Not only does he achieve kapara for everyone else, but the madriga that he gets to is so amazing. It's so obvious that the Rosh Hashiva is this person. So there's a bachar who said to Rosh Hashiva, how does Rosh Hashiva learn from Turkey Sudan? And Rosh Hashiva answered him something back, which is, it's unbelievable. He said to him, I don't learn Turkey Sudan. I learn Turkey Simcha. In other words, he didn't deny the fact that he was a broken vessel, that he had tremendous pain. But when he learned, what possessed him was Simcha. And you saw this every time he walked into a Shir Klali. And I just know from my own personal feeling, when you saw, every time I saw Rosh Hashiva, this mixture of love and awe would well up inside of me. And I wouldn't be able to take my eyes off of him. I would search for any opportunity to come in contact with him. And most of all, I would just watch in awe as he would go about his daily schedule. Despite, he would give Shir Klali, and sometimes he had to reach up to turn the daf of the Gemara, and he would hold his arms across his chest like this so they wouldn't flail around. And all the while, he would be bouncing like this. And I remember the mic sitting in front of him, scurrying back and forth, and he'd be bouncing around. And then when he had to turn the page of the Gemara, see, he held his elbow, and then it looked like he was doing kaparas. Till he got his hand down to the place to turn the page. And I came to realize after a while that he never stopped. Just. Maybe not the main focus of what I'm trying to say, but he would say, you give a shir in this type of situation, he never stopped once to clarify, to correct himself, to restate something. Every single word flowed from the beginning to the end, until the actual speaking became hard for him. But I could say I was in many shirim, and he would just go straight through the whole sugya, beautifully presented, as if he was sitting in an easy chair. Because, in a certain sense, that's where his neshama was when he was saying the shir. But I still remember that I was, maybe the most touching moment that I spent with him was when I was sitting right in front of him during the shir in the Shalmi Simple Base Medrash. And the air conditioning in the mirror is famous as being to freeze to death. And I guess because of some kind of imbalance in the metabolism because of the Parkinson's that he suffered from, he was giving the shir and I was sitting right in front of him and his face was pouring sweat. And I could not believe it. It was the heat of the summer outside, but it was freezing in there. It was freezing. There's no way that he couldn't be shivering. And he was pouring sweat the whole time. And I saw the supreme effort it took for him to say the shir. And I was just totally in awe. As soon as he finished the last word of the shir, he collapsed heavily on the bench, right next to me. And he sort of turned to me and said, oh, it's so hot in here. But then suddenly I see him straighten his shoulders and, but don't worry, it's going to be alright. And the next minute he was up like a soldier dabbling in the middle. And I was like, you know, he really is like you and me. He really, he's Superman. He really beat down his Clark Kent. He's the same Navy Finger on the yellow page. He became an unbelievable person, but it's not like now he's just kind of floating on this cloud of ruchnius and overcoming everything. He's putting in the same giant effort that anyone else would need, chas v'shalom, if we were ever in such a situation, let alone that we would need, the same tremendous determination to overcome the pain. He's doing it every second. So his madrigal is really high, but he's just like you and me. And it just, I felt so tremendously on one hand closer to him because he shared something that was like hard for him. It wasn't like he was pretending, like his usual smile. He'd walk in and he'd be flailing and he'd have a big smile on his face as if, you know, he won the lottery. But on the other hand, amid all the pain, like, you saw that he had determination to go on. Rav Nosson always often mentioned that he came to the Mir Yeshiva wearing the baseball hat. I'm not sure if it was the Cubs or the White Sox, but I remember that he never lost that. He went around once in a group of people. I think I started with this, but I got interrupted myself. That not from people came in and, you know, were touring the yeshiva. I remember one of them saying, Brian was telling me, what a tremendous spiritual energy in base medrash. You'd always have people to base medrash. I don't know anyone who walked in. If anyone walked into the base medrash on a big morning in the yeshiva, it's a must see. It's nothing like you've ever seen before in your entire lives. I thank God I was able to spend many years in that environment. But the first time I walked in there, I was completely dumbfounded. In the main base marriage, 800 people, there's a roar. You walk inside and suddenly you're assaulted by this tremendous roar of learning. And that is in many, many buildings all over the whole neighborhood, only because of Rav Nosson Tzvi's love for all the people that would otherwise have nowhere to learn. When I came to here, people learn in the closets, people learn under the stairs, on the stairs, on the stage. And that's the environment of just non-stop that we were exposed to. So let's see, went around the room. How do you connect with a bunch of non-firm college students in a meaningful way in 2 minutes that you don't have? So before saying his like 15-minute thing that he told them, he went around the room asking everyone where you're from. So that every single person knows that they had an interaction where you're from, and he would say his name and where he's from. And then I remember I was just so touched that Shiva got this mischievous smile at the end, and he says, no one from Chicago? And he was just such a human being that everyone could connect to, even if it was a superficial way. But it made it very clear that he appreciated the other people and loved them. One thing that Rav Nosson Tzvi loved was siyumim. You would come to any siyum anywhere, you make it in your house, you make it in a hall, he was there. Right after Rav Nosson Tzvi passed away, I was listening to a CD of a choir that my son had joined. He made me buy the CD. I haven't learned much. And the Shira Chadasha Boys Choir. The last song on this thing is called Hadron. And it starts out with a clip from Rav Nosson Tzvi's speech at the most recent Siyum HaShas in Yerushalayim, but they made an English Siyum HaShas. So for all the English speakers they had, people just speak to them in English. And I still remember just being completely blown away, listening to Rav Svi's short message. He got up and said, Hajjan Allah Tama Bavli. Who ever heard such beautiful words? Who ever heard such sweet words? Hajjan Allah Tama Bavli. Rav Svi loved everyone so much. His greatest nachas was for someone to make a siyum and to learn Torah, which for him was the greatest thing. And that was something that he pushed so much. You gotta learn, you gotta learn, you gotta shtag. And you hear the Bachim reviewing his shmooze in Yiddish. Like two guys on a bench in front of me, and one would say, Medav Shtagin, Medav Horvin. And each one would exchange another expression that Rav Svi would use. Medav Meirbos, Med Horvanya. What's Horvanya? Right? So Rav Svi would encourage anyone, and it would be like, he said something and you just had to do it. I idolized him, that's his. He would say, how could a Bachur come late to Shacharis? And like, suddenly the intellectual knowledge that's not appropriate, but suddenly turned into a big punch in your solar plexus. And the next morning you found yourself coming early for Shacharis because you must be sad. How could a Bachur come late for Shacharis? Maybe the most appropriate thing that I heard from Rav Svi was before Shavuos, he would always quote the Gemara, where Gemara says that Rav Yosef would celebrate Dafka on Shavuos more than the other Tavim, and he would say, "In mole ha'yomo, kama Yosef ikim shuka." If it wasn't for this day of Shavuos that the Torah was given, and I would, because of that, I learned a lot of Torah. There's so many Yossis in the street, so many Joes in the street. Kama Yosef ikim shuka. So I'll just be Joe. But now it became Rav Yosef. Rav Yosef was considered the greatest Bucky of his time. And Rav Nosson Svi would quote the Rashi, if not for this day that the Torah was given, and I learned, v'lamad the Torah, v'nisroi mati, and I was raised up as a result of that Torah learning. And Rav Nosson Svi would repeat again, v'nisroi mati, and I was raised up. You think about Rav Nosson Svi. He was mamish, he was Joe. Like, I can't say it about myself because I'm a rabbi's son. So when I came to KBY, how many years ago, I wasn't like Joe from modern Orthodox New York. I was a son of a rabbi. The rest of the was mamish Joe from Chicago. And he, native from Chicago. And native from Chicago became who he was because he learned Torah and he didn't let anything else get in the way. And so not he just became raised up, he became great. Last week, who didn't feel like an orphan standing at Rav Nosson Svi's final siyum? Siyum on 68 and a half years of a beautiful life, full of love, full of Torah, full of love for Torah, full of love for those who love Torah, and everything about him impacted on the people around him in such a tremendous way. Rav Nosson Svi's not around anymore. And for all of us that got from him, that's a tremendous void. I just wanted to point out a statistic. The Rabbeim and Torah Shavuot, if I'm not mistaken, learned collectively more than 50 years in the Gemara Yeshiva. And that means that everyone here, if they're not a direct Talmud or a Nosson Svi, they're Talmidei Talmideihem. Everyone here is a Talmud or a Nosson Svi Fekel. And even before you came here, chances are that you were impacted for the good by somebody who learned in a Nosson Svi's yeshiva. Not just because he was a yeshiva, but because the bench he was sitting on, a Nosson Svi built it. And the supper that he ate, a Nosson Svi cooked it. And the black Gemara that he knows, a Nosson Svi grabbed him and said, you've got to know this. And he did. So I feel like we all have a tremendous debt of gratitude to Rav Nosson Svi Finkel. He's someone that impacted upon us. And of course, as I said before, he was a hero. He came from the exact same background. And he's an example for all of us. What are we going to do without him? I don't know. But all I can say is that really, when anyone who met Mr. Sphere remembers his radiant smile and remembers the gentle way that he pushed us. So for me, when I think, when I dabble in the Shemeneser, at the Chayin Adam Das, Hashem, you want us to learn, don't you? I think the Nosset Sphere was just a conduit. The Nosset Sphere was just a pipeline of Hashem to shower us with love, to shower us with Torah, and all the love that we felt from him, and all the admiration that we had, and all the desire to please him, are really all just a glimmer of the love that we should feel from Hashem, and the love that Hashem feels from us, and the desire that Hashem has that we should please him by learning. And so the biggest thing that we could do is to connect with Hashem, who is the true source of all the love and all the greatness that we saw in Rav Nosson Tzvi. And even if he's not here on this earth anymore to inspire and to get nachas from us, let's try to take some of the cues that we hear about Rav Nosson Tzvi, about his greatness, about his love for people and for Torah, and try to make ourselves also a conduit for this love into this world.